Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
History at Sunset has begun. We're going to talk about some programs going on with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park this summer and just history in general with John Hennessy with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. Hi, John.
Ted, I need your advice. You have been wallowing in the defeat of the Red Wings for
nine years now. Is that how long? Yeah, it has been.
I don't know how to really deal with the defeat of the Penguins, and maybe you can give me... Give me some advice. I refuse to be as morose about it as you seem to be all these years, but do you have some advice for a fellow loser?
It's a tough road, and especially when you have friends who keep bringing it up that Game 7 in Detroit that night when the Red Wings lost to the Penguins. It keeps coming up.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury. Yeah. He haunts you, doesn't he?
It does. But see, you don't have the same situation that I had of where I had an aging team. Your team is still
good.
Competitive.
Right.
So.
And next year, I'm confident that they will win. But it was fun watching the Capitals, wasn't it?
It was.
They certainly, Washington, the city, I'm not a Capitals fan per se. And it didn't mean anything to me that they won, other than it meant the Penguins didn't win. But to watch the city respond like that was pretty wild.
You and I have talked where you've tossed around, you know, perhaps someday doing something or writing a book or doing some research on the original six.
Yeah, I have in my basement a whole bookshelf of books about the original six. Being, of course, the original six teams of the National Hockey League. And I haven't ever seen a lot of sports journalists write about sports,
mm-hmm.
but not a lot of historians write about sports. And to really kind of look at it more seriously, maybe. But you can't avoid the fun because it is, after all, a game above anything else. But someday I might do that when I take off this Park Service uniform and start a different life one of these years.
And the Stanley Cup is just such an interesting, of all sports trophies, there's nothing like it.
Not even close. You know, we went to Toronto to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
So you've seen it.
Yeah, and got our picture taken with it and everything. And it's like this pilgrimage that hockey fans do. And, nobody goes looking for the Super Bowl trophy. I guess I can imagine what it looks like. Baseballs, got all these spiky stuff poking up from it. But the Stanley Cup is the trophy of the people. And you can get your picture taken with it. You can hang with it a little bit. And, of course, I think all of Washington has drunk out of it the last week or so, pretty much.
Yes.
The way that it looks like it's made its rounds in the bars in Georgetown and elsewhere. There's no question that the culture around the Stanley Cup is just totally different and much more fun than any other sport. It's kind of amazing to me. Even people who don't like hockey kind of are amazed at the passion and the excitement that surrounds the Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup will spend the summer traveling to every player's hometown on the team. And they have two guys, that's their whole job.
Oh, I know.
You can follow one of the guys, his name is Philip Pritchard, on Twitter. And his job is to wear white gloves and travel around and watch over the Stanley Cup. Of course, the white gloves are pretty funny in light of the fact that the cup ends up in the bottom of pools and babies are baptized in it and all of that sort of thing. But pretty much the players, once they... have the cup, they can pretty much do anything they want with it as long as they don't bung it up too much.
Yeah.
Some of the big old names are coming off this year, including some Red Wings names.
Gordie Howe goes off this year.
The bands on the cup get replaced every several years, and that'll be an odd thing. Of course, if the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup more often, they'd be on there more.
Yeah, but it hasn't happened in a while.
Hasn't happened since 2008, as a matter of fact, when the next year they were beaten by the Penguins.
I remember that. On to other things. History at Sunset is a staple of the Park Service, and boy, I think this week will be week two, and you do it every week right on through the early part of August.
Right, ten weeks in the summer, generally speaking. We've varied from that a little bit, but we try to do sites that either people have never been to. Like last week, we did Germana Ford. Greg Mertz did a program at Germana Ford, and almost nobody's been at Germana Ford. We got with the Germana Foundation and had a bunch of people show up for that. And this week, Frank O'Reilly, and I'm kind of going to be his second, but Frank's the big attraction. We'll do a hike to on the southern end of the Fredericksburg battlefield and go to the site of the slave cabins for Mansfield and talk about some of the fighting down there. Frank and I went out yesterday to look at it. We found this kind of neat path through the woods that we're going to use, but all sorts of topics. 20th century Chatham. We're going to do a program this year at Hartwood Church. Mm-hmm. We've never done anything out at Hartwood Church. We'll do a program on the Civilian Conservation Corps and the development of the Wilderness Battlefield and how this park developed over time. It's kind of an interesting story in itself. The park is always changing and always evolving, but its most intense period of development, of course, took place right after its creation. And Eric Menk and Becky Oakes will do a program that really looks specifically at that. And many of the CCC descendants live in the area. There are very few CCC workers still alive. The program was abolished in early years of World War II. There aren't many alumni of the CCC around, but in its day, it was an immense, immense presence in this community with multiple camps, and almost all of the fundamental work that's visible and used in the park today, from roads to culverts to bridges, all of those things, all of that stuff was done by the Civilian Conservation Corps. So that one is especially a little bit of a different twist. That's on July 6th that we'll be doing that. And a wide run of other stuff. We'll do something out at the Carpenter Farm at the Isaac Walton League, the site of Second Corps hospitals during the wilderness. And so we're excited about it. For us, it's our chance to do something a little different, to prepare something new. And while these programs are a lot to prepare for, we always find other uses for the information that we generate, in films, exhibits, all that sort of thing. So this is our kind of big push every year, and it really refreshes the historians, too, because it gives them something new to chew upon.
I bet because they're about 90 minutes, there's a lot to put in there. Sometimes you never know. Sometimes people have lots of questions, but other times they don't.
Yeah, they're free flowing programs. Oftentimes they're not detailed. The goal is not to find detail in this. The goal is to find significance and maybe ask people to see these resources in ways they haven't seen them before. So, History at Sunset, we've talked about this before, has always been, a program either focused on sites people have never been to before, like Belle Plaine or Quail Landing or things like, or Sherwood Forest, or familiar sites through a different lens. And so the CCC program, for example, out at the Wilderness is one of those. Most people don't go to Saunders Field at the Wilderness except to learn about the fighting there on May 5th and 6th, 1864. But this is a visit that looks at the place in very different ways. And in fact, in that field, Saunders Field, which was a CCC camp, there's still tons of evidence of the camp on the ground. And that's kind of going to be the point of departure for the conversation about the evolution of the park as it's exhibited out there.
John Hennessy here, the Chief Historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We will continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. History at Sunset is underway. It is on it's on Friday nights. Friday nights, it's always been on Friday nights. Is that where we'll always stay, do you think?
Well, we've heard some commentary. I'd be curious what people think and invite them to email me about it. That there are a lot of people who have a hard time getting there on Friday nights.
Hmm.
Either people who commute or certainly visitors from out of town who often don't come until Saturday. So I'd be curious. I mean, certainly we get an audience is large enough. You know, sometimes, I mean, we routinely get 100, 150 people on these programs. So that's not the problem. But if there's adjustments we can make to help the series reach more people, I'd be interested in that. And I'd be curious to hear what people in the community think about that question, whether we were to, you know, repeat a program maybe on a Saturday morning or, you know, do some on Friday nights, some on Saturday nights. It has become a Saturday night or Friday night tradition for sure. But there's also lots going on Friday nights. You know, the museum does its music in Market Square every Friday night now, which means that we haven't been able to do really programs downtown anymore because it's just really kind of busy and loud downtown. So we're going to look at alternatives, but I'm very interested what people think of that. I've gotten a couple notes in the last month or so suggesting that some people have a hard time getting to the stuff. And even driving at night is a challenge for some folks. So if you have comments on that, my email is john_Hennessy, H-E-N-N-E-S-S-Y, at nps.gov.
Okay. That's interesting because it has a for what is it's been at least what
since 2002 we've been doing it. So
okay.
It's 17 years now.
Yeah, they say a dozen years, but even more than that. The one thing I really like about History at Sunset is you get off on some side stories that you would never hear about. And couple come when you were at the Stafford Civil War Park and you did the program a couple of years ago and we stood up on a field and you talked about how they played baseball.
Right.
And you talked about some recipes that they used. And it's those kind of things
right.
that you hear a lot about.
Well, and I think that the magic of something like that is the fact that you're in a place where those ideas or thoughts are relevant. I mean, it's not particularly interesting to talk about recipes from the Civil War in a general sort of way, but if you do it in the middle of a camp site where you can see where the fire pits were and the hearths were, that has a little bit of a different impact on people. And, you know, it's funny how Stafford has always responded tremendously to History at Sunset. I think of our 10 largest programs, I think six of them have been in Stafford County, including, you know, Quail Landing and Vail Plain and the Stafford Civil War Park, which had 200 people or so on it. Stafford always responds extremely, extremely well. But we love History at Sunset because it gives us a chance to talk about things that we normally don't talk to. You know, most visitors that we have, we're fortunate to get their attention for 35 or 40 minutes. And, you know, and during that time, we try to give them vivid stuff, but it's also pretty straightforward. The fundamentals of why this place matters and, you know, what is it about the Sunken Road that makes it a different place than any place else. History at Sunset, we can do a little bit more than that. And so it is the fuel that keeps us going, for sure.
One of my favorite ones was a couple of years ago, was at Vail Plain, and you and Noel Harrison were doing one. And you usually, when you give programs, they're very good, and you hold people's, it's interesting just to watch, you hold people's attention.
Yeah, not that night.
No, because the moon, it was a perfect night, and this moon, it became, you kept wanting to just And people did. They just got up and started taking pictures of the moon. Right.
The big, huge super moon rose over my left shoulder. I think there were some bald eagles flying around.
Yeah.
Nobody was listening to me. Although that was that was the second largest History at Sunset program we ever did, was at Belle Plaine. We'd like to go back there again someday because it's a tremendous story. It was a tremendous sight. The yacht club there really stepped up and let us use the site there, and we'd like to go back there someday. But yeah, that was I think of all the programs that we've done, that's the one that people comment to me about the most, and it has nothing to do with me or the history or anything else. It was purely the setting and the moon rising over Potomac Creek out there.
It was tremendous. The other one that meant a lot, and one is just as far as you got there and I just learned so much, was the first time at a Kwai Landing. Yeah. I'd never been there, and I had no idea. And you always have, with History at Sunset, you always bring pictures along, and the pictures, to look at those pictures and to look at that site and to just think, this was some place.
I think you won an award that night at
that's right. MC Moncure took a picture of you and me in that award.
For broadcasting the 150th.
Yes. Which is,
I'm presuming the Pulitzer is not far behind.
I'm sure
right?
It's not far behind. Yeah. I'm sure it's yes, and we'll do that again. Maybe we'll do it out there. But no, that was a great story because that was another area where you got there and you just thought I've been here before. I've heard of this place and people coming here, but I didn't know it did this.
I mean, that's the magic of History at Sunset. Is you know a lot of these places you hear every day. You know, Kwai Landing. Everyone in this region. Well, I suppose there's some who haven't, but almost everyone has heard of a Kwai Landing, but almost nobody knows really what it is.
Yeah.
And a Kwai Landing really has a dramatic, powerful story that touches not just on the military story, but the passage of slaves, the presence of presidents in our community. One of the reasons that 30-plus presidents have visited Fredericksburg is because of a Kwai Landing and the way the railroad network worked at, you know, prior to 1872. So, it's fun for us to just be able to illuminate some aspects of these stories in these places that people haven't thought about before. And, you know, there are some programs I think people walk away. And for me, the goal is always to create something that people will remember the rest of their lives. And they'll remember having been there the rest of their lives. And I know that that's the goal for all of us who do these History at Sunset programs. And I think we succeed most nights.
It's, again, Friday nights at 7. And the other interesting thing about it is, after for a lot of years, you had very few kind of either rainouts or washouts. Yeah. Last year, it just everything just blew up.
Yes, all of our good fortune. We went. I think our first 16 years, we had two programs rained out, and last year we had four or something like that. And it was just kind of. We finally just started chuckling about the whole thing. And but anything that was canceled last year outright has been put on this year's schedule. So, we try to make sure that the work that we have done to prepare for these is not lost.
Are there any History at Sunset programs that you still in the back of your mind just think, boy, I'd like to have access to that? Or is there anything out there still?
You may not be able to say. There's lots of programs that I would like to do. I'd love to do a paddle tour on Potomac Creek at Belle Plaine. We might work on that with Bill Mix and Hal Wiggins and for maybe something in the fall. History at Sunset, we're always kind of, you know, we have kind of morphed into every year, including kind of a sit and listen program at a place that doesn't really require a lot of movement. The Kwai Landing program was really the first of that sort that we did.
You sat.
And so every year we've done one. Last year we did Salem Church Inside and Out. This year's Hartwood Church Inside and Out. I'd love to do some programs at some of the historic homes in the area. We were going to do one at Fall Hill a couple years ago, a tremendous site in Fredericksburg with some tremendous stories. So there's lots of those. I think on the battlefields, you know, within the park itself, We've hit most of them over the years, but we don't repeat them very often. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of the 170 or so programs we've done, more than 110 are original programs. In other words, never done before. So our staff is pretty good at coming up with new ideas and new programs. But you know what? If people out there have ideas or thoughts or requests, we take requests. And we'll see what we can do and work within the community. I think for a lot of people, the real most attractive part of history at Sunset is that we're often outside the park, that we're doing sites that they can never get access to otherwise. And we do that by the grace of the people who own them and working with the localities to make those happen. So, you know, this year we've got Hartwood Church, we've got the Carpenter Farm, which is outside the park. And Germana Ford last weekend with Greg Mertz. And so, you know, every year we try to fold some stuff in that is outside the park. And I think in many ways those are the most popular of all the programs we do.
I remember just a couple of years ago, you did the first program at the Carpenter Farm, and that's well worth going to.
Yeah.
That's
it's a some good powerful stuff. Story. It's a great site. You can still see the remnants of Union Graves on the property. One of the largest field hospitals on any of the battlefields here, and extremely well documented. And the Isaac Walton League has invited us out to do that program again. And so we're excited about doing it. So if you did not get out there a couple years ago, or even if you did, join us on that. That program is on July 13th. In fact, I'll be doing that. And it's an exciting site, an exciting story.
John Hennessy here with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We will continue on and talk about some stuff going on around here when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park here this morning with History at Sunset underway. And this begins a really busy time for you. One of the things we didn't talk about, John, as far as History at Sunset sort of has created the fit history hikes that you do in the fall now.
Yeah, and the spring.
Yeah,
we do 8 a year, and once the weather cools down, we'll have another set of 4 in the fall, and they've been very popular. I don't know that they would be the basis by themselves for being a fit person. But if you do other stuff, they contribute. I'd actually like to do a running tour of sites for the runners locally. Because I know, I mean, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of people who run in the park all the time. And I wonder if we were actually to kind of fold in a little history with their running, whether they would be interested in something like that. So that might be something we do, too, to for the fall as well, and schedule something separate from Fit History Hikes. But the Fit History Hikes have been very popular. They've attracted a totally different crowd.
Yes, I was going to say, I know people that would never go to the Friday night to History at Sunset, but love these because it's just enough history, but they feel like they get their steps in.
That's right. And, you know, there are hikes anywhere from usually 2 to 5.5 miles or so. We try to go at 2 miles an hour on average. And people really seem to like it. It's a great idea, and we're going to keep it going. The challenge we have is that we only have X number of trails in the park. So we haven't been as successful in kind of diversifying the routes and the selection as we might otherwise be. So, you know, at Chancellorsville, for example, there's really realistically only a couple places you can do a hike of more than 2 or 3 miles, and same is true at Fredericksburg. But we're working at it. This year we did the Chatham Bike Trail down to Falmouth Beach, which was, I think, a very meaningful route. At some point in the future, we might do the Heritage Trail in Fredericksburg itself. Yeah. There's lots of cool stuff along it.
Yes.
And the idea is to, you know, 80% of the time we're walking and 20% of the time we're talking. So it's kind of the reverse of our normal programs. But, yeah, we've enjoyed doing them as well. And they help all of us get our steps in, too. Everybody, Fitbit mania is real.
Yes. Yep. This continues to be an interesting time. And we, last year, with everything that happened, especially after Charlottesville, we did a couple of just some of the, you know, some of the real serious stuff talking about. And I'm sure we'll do those shows again. As all of that, we don't hear as much about the monuments and everything, at least right now. It's hard for me to believe that it's just going to go away, but it's at least simmered down.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that issue rides the wave of the news cycle. When something happens like mm-hmm. Charlottesville, those issues rise to the top, and the rest of the time, it's there. I mean, certainly our staff, when people come into the park, we have lots of people who want to talk about that issue, who want to know what the Park Service's policy is on monuments, whether, you know, Park Service is going to take down monuments, no, and those sorts of things. But these are, I mean, it's hard to imagine a more difficult issue for communities, at least related to history, than this question.
Yeah.
And the conversation on both sides, you know, you sit and you listen to folks and you say, well, that makes sense. And then you listen to another group of folks and you say, well, that makes sense too. So, you know, this is not an issue with a clear line that is on one side is right and one side is wrong. The placement of these monuments in the first place were community expressions toward past. And I think today what the challenge is that exactly what were they trying to express? Were these monuments necessarily, as they've always been seen, an expression of respect and an attempt to memorialize the valor and efforts of individual soldiers? Or, as many people see them today, are they symbols of an attempt to create a nation whose purpose, which included the perpetual sustenance of slavery, is something that we reject today? And so that's really kind of where the conversation breaks, and it is, you know, Fredericksburg doesn't have a Civil War monument in a public civic space. There is a Confederate memorial, of course, in the Confederate cemetery, mm-hmm. and there are Confederate memorials on the battlefield for sure, but there isn't anything in a civic space here, unlike, you know, places like Leesburg and Rockville and in Baltimore, who have sometimes very large and elaborate monuments in civic spaces. But in Fredericksburg, interestingly enough, the same principles, the same ideas, but in very different form, have been focused on a conversation about the slave auction block in town, which to me is very interesting. The arguments are quite different, and those who are arguing for its removal are often within the African American community, because, as many say, I hate to be as vague as that, but you can't do any better than that. As many say that, you know, this is a reminder of a painful time, and it's hurtful, and having that block on a street corner, as it's been there since probably the 1840s, is painful, if not disrespectful, reminder of what once was. Not everybody sees that way, of course. Across the world, communities, nations are preserving what has become largely or widely known as sites of conscience, you know, Holocaust sites, slave sites on the west coast of Africa, places like that. You know, there is been a really concerted effort in our country, for example, Manzanar and other detention sites from World War II, these sites of conscience have become really a point of emphasis in preserving them. But here the dynamics in Fredericksburg are a little bit different, and the arguments are very personal. I think the argument is, in fact, bigger than one of whether or not to keep the block on the corner of Charles and William. Really, the question is whose voice will be heard? And, you know, the voices who were not heard for 250 years in this country now want to be heard. And so there's an element of this conversation that is particularly difficult, very interesting to watch, and watching the community work through this issue, first on whether it would stay or go, and council has voted that it will remain. And now the conversation, at least ostensibly, although there are a lot of people who still argue whether it should stay or go, has shifted to, okay, well, it's going to stay, so what do we do with it? What's done with it? And this is a community that the Park Service really hasn't, or excuse me, a conversation that the Park Service hasn't really been involved in. We're happy to provide support and information and all of that, but it really is a decision that is one up to this community. And I understand the desire for the Park Service to kind of step back in this case. We have organizationally a very strong bias toward preservation. That's what we do. That's our ethic.
Yeah.
And I understand the request for us to kind of not weigh in on this, and that's fine. We certainly respect that, and we're available to provide whatever information might be helpful. The city has engaged the Coalition of Sites of Conscience to help work through this issue in the community, which is a very wise approach. But, you know, in the end, it's there isn't a middle ground. It does either stay or it does go. I guess the middle ground is that it stays with interpretation. I think everybody agrees it needs to be understood.
Yeah.
But it's a tough issue. It's a very difficult issue. In many ways, much more complex and quite different than the Confederate monument issue that other communities are dealing with.
Well, and with the monuments, we talked about this last year, just about how even was Robert E. Lee had written about monuments, and you had certain things written, but in this case, you've got a piece of history, and I think we all are learning. I think a few years ago, a lot of us would have just said, you know, it's history, leave it there, get over it. But we're learning more and more that there are a lot of layers to this.
Well,
like you said,
history is not what history is. Of course, its foundation is what happened in the past, but really, what history is kind of how it lives in our society. That's why history changes all the time. That's why in the 1950s, historians told a very different story about slavery and about Reconstruction and about the Civil War than we do today. So it's always changing depending on the perception of those who are engaged in the society. And, of course, now we have a much more diverse society, happily so, in that, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, large segments of the American population were excluded from these public conversations. They didn't have the vote. They didn't have the political voice. But they do now. And that's the change. And, of course, the other thing is generational. You know, the longer we get from the war itself, the less personal connection people have to the event. And we have reveled as a nation in seeing this event through the eyes of our ancestors. And but we have increasingly people in America who don't see the event through the eyes of ancestors, even if they have ancestors, but see the event through the eyes or the lens of what the two sides, the Union, the United States of America, and the Confederacy, what were their principles that underlay their creation of themselves? And in the Confederacy, of course, you know, a major component, the biggest difference between the U.S. Constitution and the Confederate Constitution is a commitment to the sustenance of slavery. And so you can understand why more and more people see the Confederacy through that lens. And that's not a happy lens. And anything that tends to kind of glorify or memorialize that cause, not so much the men who waged it, but that cause is a challenge, is a problem. And so we're hearing more and more people speak out about that and on that issue. And that, I think, is going to intensify over time because, you know, the personal connection, which, you know, Americans and especially Southerners hold very dear and made it almost a regional project to sustain and vindicate the memory of men who fought for the Confederacy and actually civilians who suffered during the war as well. That kind of traditional role in America is being challenged by a reconceiving of the Confederacy, not through the lens of those men, but through the lens of national purpose. And that's a difficult conversation to have.
Yeah, and the Confederate flag, you see it in Stafford. You drive around the state, there's one just outside of Lexington. There's I think it's in RICO. And
you know, and the flag means different things to different people.
Yeah.
And I don't know that, you know, the corollary to freedom of speech is freedom of perception. And there are lots of people who perceive the Confederate flag maybe not in the way that you or someone who chooses to display it intends it to be seen. And that disconnect is frustrating, is maddening to some people, but it is absolutely understandable in the context of how our vision of the Confederacy is evolving in our society today.
John Hennessy is the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We will wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
John Hennessy here, the chief historian with the Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. We were just talking. It's interesting when we talk history as far as radio history in Fredericksburg. This was WFVA was the first radio station that that was in the Fredericksburg area.
Yeah. Well, and you're the greatest legend associated with that grand and glorious history. Predates World War II.
Yeah.
And do you know where the original studios were?
Everything was always right here.
Always right here.
Yeah,
I believe so.
Isn't that interesting?
Kind of an odd place for a...
Yeah.
Of course, today we wouldn't put a radio station in the middle of a subdivision.
It was always here. Now, it may have been downtown initially or for a very brief time. But no, you think about the World War II announcement and just over the years with history, whether it was Nixon or civil rights and all the things that happened here. And even just locally, I mean, a lot of programs. We have people, you know, we talk about how people stop by the Park Service and inquire about things. People will stop by here and they've had a relative who, you know, played a banjo or something in a lot of live music from here over the years, and nothing. There is not a shred of tape that I know of.
So there's no stash somewhere of these hidden tapes of, wow.
I don't know whatever happened. Nothing. Nothing was ever saved, as far as I know.
Yeah, what a tragedy that is. I know that when I was doing some work on World War II, I came across some scripts for some segments on WFVA over at the American Legion post that they have. But that's the only thing I've ever seen. And, you know, the station's undergone lots of format changes over the years and things like that. But, you know, WFVA, WRVA, all kind of a family, yes, historically. You know, it was the only radio station here for a long time.
And that's when AM radio was so big. And now the air signal of this is not strong, but there's a lot of listeners who it is streamed.
Yeah.
And we'll do it that way. But no, you think about things not saved, and the more you think of it, it's not all that surprising, just because you think of, you know, there are no Super Bowl I, that, you know, some of those things were never saved.
Yeah.
And those were the days you just kept recording over tape.
Yeah, all those beta tapes or whatever they were that, you know, have seven or eight different events. So for you and, you know, the news gathering business, you do a lot of history. And you spend a lot of time with us and with other groups and stuff. How does that fit into kind of the mix of things that make Ted Schubel the radio legend that he is?
I've always just felt in this area to not, and that's why when I connected with you and we connected, I was thrilled. And as you continued to add and do programs, just because I thought history is so important. And not even just what it means financially to this area, which we've talked about, is huge. But there's how you cannot focus on history and make that a part of. And that's why when anniversaries come up or things, I just there's too much history. Even if you're just mildly interested in it, you should at least know what where you live.
So what is your view on – I'm interviewing you now. This has
really changed.
What about controversy? Because you don't do a lot of controversy. And you certainly don't fan the flames of local controversy.
No, we probably could do more of that. Yeah. But no, I feel like, especially by having you and having others in here and having a chance for them to speak. Now, with politicians, it's a little bit different because you can press things on things. But
do you ever call them out?
Yeah. But it's not.
You make them sweat sometimes.
I don't know if they've ever sweated.
I don't know that anyone's ever sweated in your presence.
I don't think so.
You're a genial guy.
But I think what we can provide is with what the internet provides, but just having you in here and others are able to come in here every day gives a different perspective of hearing. In this case, of hearing or going and covering events, just seeing what people say.
Well, and I know when I go out for a program and when Ted Schubel's there, I know we're doing something important. It's true. So, no, we've been very fortunate to have this good relationship with you. You've brought lots of attention on what we do, and we appreciate that. And someday, I am sure the Pulitzer will find its way.
It's a good relationship, and I think it makes sense in this area that I think you need to have a microphone, and we need to be telling the story. And we'll have to do more of this. This was fun.
How long has it been since the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup?
2008. Too many years.
It's only been a year since the Penguins. It's still a fresh memory.
Too many years. So. John Hennessy, Chief Historian, Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania National Military Park. If you've got ideas of when you think history at sunset, if it would make it easier for you, drop them a line and let them know. John, thanks. We'll talk soon. That's it. We will see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.